The Tom Woods Show, episode 2239.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, all you old timers out there from the Ron Paul 2008 campaign, you may remember my friend Larry Lepard, who spent $200,000 of his own money on full-page newspaper ads in support of Dr. Paul. Well, Larry has had an uncanny way with money over the years, and he made a presentation to my paid membership on how to insure yourself against currency debasement. That is to say, how to survive inflation. Well, I took that presentation out from behind the paywall, and I'm making it available to the general public for free. Check it out at tomwoods.com/Larry. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Very glad to be joined by John Ziegler, who is on the Tom Woods Show for the first time. He is TV commentator, host of a relatively new podcast called The Death of Journalism. That ought to resonate well with the folks who listen to this show. Also, With the Benefit of Hindsight. And John, you, I think, first came to my attention over the Penn State Joe Paterno Sandusky story. And then when I went to check you out on Twitter, I found you were following me already. And I thought, I don't know what I did to earn this guy's follow, but doggone it, I'm pretty happy about that. So can you start off, because this is a story about journalism, isn't it? Can you start off by telling us about the real story here, what you did?
With regard to the Penn State Joe Paterno Jerry Sandusky story?
Yes, please.
Yeah, well, the podcast you referenced, With the Benefit of Hindsight, which is an epic, epic podcast. If you like true crime stories, especially those that defy the conventional wisdom, you will fall in love with this one. In fact, I actually warn people who start With the Benefit of Hindsight, make sure you know what you're getting into, because you're probably going to give up about 70 hours of your life. You're not going to regret it, but it's a big commitment, because we have done an extraordinary amount of work. Myself, our producer, Mike Agavino, and my co-host, Liz Habib, a longtime TV news and sports anchor here in Los Angeles, who I've known for about 32 years, both of us having grown up in Pennsylvania. The incredibly long story short time of this is that everything that people think they know about the Penn State Joe Paterno Jerry Sandusky scandal is not just not true. It's either mostly false, totally false, or 180 degrees from the conventional wisdom story that we were told so certainly by the entirety of the media industrial complex back in 2011, November 2011, 11 years ago as we speak, when this story exploded like a nuclear bomb across the entire country and really maintained itself as a huge story for several years after that. And, you know, I'm happy to answer any and all questions about it, but I can just tell you that when it comes to the issue of media and media accountability, which I've devoted much of my adult life to and suffered greatly about and over, having picked many battles over the years on this issue, there has never been a more dramatic example of media malpractice than how the media handled that particular scandal. And I immediately suspected that something was amiss in that story, but I had no idea that the entirety of the story was totally and completely wrong. And we haven't just come up with a counter theory to what occurred. We actually flesh out what really did happen in a far more logical way than the news media ever dreamed of doing. One of the many, 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 many problems in that entire scenario, that entire narrative, is that nobody from the conventional wisdom standpoint ever even bothered to try to tell us, okay, so what do you think really happened here? We do
well,
that.
Especially for people outside the U.S., what is alleged to have happened?
Well, allegedly, and this is still to this day set in stone as if it came down from Moses from Mount Sinai on a tablet, that Jerry Sandusky, former assistant football coach at Penn State University, was a serial pedophile for decades, and Penn State either didn't know about it or actually did know about it and enabled it and even covered up for it. And the legendary football coach Joe Paterno helped in this cover-up, and the esteemed, very respected administrators at Penn State, including Graham Spanier, Tim Curley, and Gary Schultz, all of whom went to jail for something that didn't happen, They all covered it up, all for this former assistant coach. And this is all now accepted as real and true. And we don't even need to bother getting into the details because we just know it's all true. And I'm telling you that while I have no connection to Penn State, in fact, I actually despise Penn State for how they handled that entire story, I am 1,000% sure I lose no sleep over my now very well-known assertion that the whole story is wrong. I would bet anything I have that I am right, the media is wrong, and one of the many ways that I know this is the case is that nobody knows as much about the case as I do, not even Jerry Sandusky knows as much about the case as I do, and nobody, none of my critics will ever come close to, forget about debating me, they won't even hear me out because they know they have no information, no argument, and they would get crushed because I know the story inside and out. And I basically, when people say, aren't you the guy that believes that Jerry Sandusky is innocent? I go, no, no, I'm the guy that proved Jerry Sandusky is innocent. And I don't even like Jerry Sandusky. It's just, to me, Tom, one of the most important parts of that whole story is that it is laughable, the narrative that was just blindly accepted and became gospel in 2.5 days in a media firestorm back in November 2011. If you know anything about this story, it never made any sense. And the reason why it never made any sense is because it's inherently an absurd story. But once the media had the narrative and they became invested in it, it was all over because that's the world we live in now. We never admit mistakes. We never do any introspection. We never revisit things once new information comes out, unless for some bizarre reason it's in our self-interest to do so. And it's never been in the self-interest of the news media to do that in this case. I'm the only moron that went against my own self-interest in this whole story, and I have suffered greatly for it, but I'm right.
I'll put on the show notes page a link to, because I've seen you interviewed on this subject at length, so I'll put a link to somewhere where you lay out the whole case if people would like to pursue that further. So that's tomwoods.com/2239. How many years ago was this?
11 years ago. As we speak, that story exploded across the media landscape in America, although technically the story had already been percolating for about 7 or 8 months before that.
Okay. So now you have a brand new, I mean, newish, what is it, like 18 episodes, something like that, of The Death of Journalism?
This morning we taped our 9th episode of The Death of Journalism.
No, sorry, it wasn't 18, it was 8. Sorry, yeah, I was looking at it wrong. So it's still quite new. And the purpose of it is somewhat self-explanatory, but why don't you describe it?
Well, The Death of Journalism, where I and Liz Habib once again get together to talk about what's going on with regard to the issue of media and media accountability. Oftentimes, we're looking at the news of the day through the prism of how the media covered it, but we're also sometimes taking deep dives into stories from the past where the media blew it, or one of my favorite things that we do is we tell stories of our own experiences from our vast careers. Both Liz and I have been in the news media in different forms for over 30 years each. Liz in a much more mainstream fashion, but I've been in virtually every aspect of it. And we know the nuts and bolts of it. We know how the sausage is made. And we expose that on a biweekly basis. Tuesdays and Thursdays, we release our episodes, which are usually about an hour and 15, hour and 30 minutes long. So far, people have found them to be very, very compelling. Like everybody else, as of this taping, we're deeply invested in looking at what's going on with regard to the election. And since both Liz and I are conservatives, although we're different brands of conservatives, I'm a never Trump conservative and have been from the beginning, though I'm the only never Trump conservative that I know of that didn't sell out during COVID. Liz is much more of a traditional Trump conservative with some hesitations, especially with regard to how he handled COVID. But it makes an interesting dynamic because we go after the right-wing media often as much as we go after the left-wing media because incompetence and malpractice is hardly only on the left. It happens on the right as well. And we're in a crisis in this country. We're in a crisis where the vast majority of the American people have almost no trust of most of our institutions, but specifically the news media. And I don't know how we exist as a society, at least as a functioning society, going forward when you have that many people so inherently distrustful of the information that they're getting from formerly trusted news sources. And frankly, I don't blame the public because having lived it for over 30 years, I know exactly through my own personal experience why people should not have trust of the news media, although I am far, 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 far less conspiratorial than a lot of, for instance, what I would refer to as the Trump base has become. I think the Trump base actually kind of has PTSD now and automatically jumps to conspiracy conclusions when they're not warranted because they're so used to being lied to by the news media. But I am absolutely in the camp that the news media, the bigger the story, this is a strange phenomenon, Tom, the bigger the story, the more likely the news media will blow it and the more dramatically the news media will likely blow it. That has been my experience, both personally as well as professionally in my 30 plus years of watching this.
Well, let me throw at you one of the questions I consider to be a $1 million question. And I want to give you an example with this question. Are they worse now than they were before, they being the journalistic class, or are we just noticing it more? And so what I mean by that is now that information dissemination is so much more decentralized because of the internet, you know, you've got people with cameras all over the place. You've got people with blogs and Twitter accounts and whatever who can correct in real time what the media is saying, whereas we did not have that 30, 40, 50 years ago. So maybe the media got away with all kinds of things back then that we didn't know about because we weren't in a position to know. And the example I have in mind is, where would Nicholas Sandman have been in 1982? His life ruined permanently and he'd have no way to defend himself. Whereas thanks to the internet, I could watch the entire video footage of what happened. It was under 2 hours and I was instantly the world's foremost expert on it because I was one of the only people who watched the whole footage. And instantly, he could be exonerated. Thanks to that. So I wonder, have they just gotten worse or has the technology to track and keep an eye on them just gotten better or both?
It's a great question. I do think it's some of both, but I would be more in the camp of they actually have gotten worse. I am not someone that looks at the past with rose-colored glasses. There was never a time in which the news media was remotely perfect, but I do believe that there were eras where the news media was much better than it is today. I actually think that the golden era in this country for journalism was probably, I would say, from the Kennedy assassination until the advent of cable television in the 90s. That was when I think the news media had the most power that they generally, not always, but generally at least tried to use for the purpose of truth. There were obviously exceptions to that. It was, in my view, huge amounts of liberal bias in that era. Maybe not as much as there is sometimes today, because now, in my view, the so-called mainstream networks, because there's a conservative media, they have just let their hair down and just decided, hey, screw it. We're going to be as liberal as we want to be. There's nothing, no need to even hide it anymore, like they used to hide it in the Walter Cronkite days. But the reason why I think it's gotten a lot worse is because the business model has collapsed. It's always follow the money, right? And in the era that I refer to as the golden era, again, that was not perfect, if you owned a newspaper or a television station or a radio station, that was a license to print money. And you didn't have to worry about, for instance, how much the news product was going to cost, or the news product didn't have to jump after ratings or clicks, which didn't even exist back then, because it almost didn't matter. You could be a third or fourth place media outlet in a big market and you were still making bank. Well, that's no longer the case because the business model collapsed. The advertising model collapsed and fragmentation occurred with cable news. And so now you have news organizations chasing, sometimes frantically and desperately, after stories that they think the public will be interested in enough to boost their ratings or their subscriber base enough to where they can survive and make a profit and not get fired. Basically, the tail is now wagging the dog. And what this has created now, see, truth is no longer the coin of the realm. The coin of the realm in the media world is popularity, not truth. And this has devastating consequences because what media outlets have effectively become are therapy centers for their targeted demographic or their cult. They are supposed to tell their cult on that particular day the news that will make them feel the best and prevent them from feeling bad. It's therapy. It's not news. And so if a news story is going to make a particular news outlet's target demographic feel bad, then at most it's going to be mentioned and we're going to move on as fast as we possibly can. And we live in a world now where what gets reported is irrelevant. It's what gets repeated that matters. Because if it's not repeated and repeated and repeated in this fragmented age, it has no impact. And so now you have situations where the tail is wagging the dog. Media outlets are giving their base of support, much like politicians, what they want to hear rather than the truth. And oftentimes, to tell the truth, you have to be willing to be unpopular. We started this conversation with the whole Penn State, Joe Paterno, Jerry Sandusky situation. The only reason I found the truth about that whole deal is that I was willing to be unpopular. No one in the media who has any real power is willing to be unpopular because they have too much to lose. These people have very cushy lives. They are adored, the top ones, the most powerful ones. They get paid a lot of money. They live in their own little bubble. And the jobs, if they lose them, are nearly impossible to replace. And so nobody, that's why I say the bigger the story, the more likely it is that the media will blow it. Why? Because the bigger the story, the bigger the risk for going outside the herd. And if you go outside the media herd in a way that embarrasses them, you will get run over and crushed. That's what they've done to me, except I'm still standing. That is not an environment where the truth can win in situations where the truth, as it often is unpopular.
And they have these cushy positions and they have observed with their own eyes how quickly they can be lost and everything they've, all the pleasures they've enjoyed can be taken away if they have the wrong opinion, if they have the wrong opinion even once. Mm-hmm. If it's the really, really wrongiest of the wrong, then it can all be taken away. I want to read
can
to
I
you.
Can I stop you there for a second, Tom?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Because what you just said is so true, but let's take it out of the theoretical and into the practical. Look what happened during COVID. Not one major media outlet or personality dared to even remotely suggest that the conventional establishment Fauci-esque vision of COVID could be wrong. Not even the most remote effort was made in that direction. You couldn't even give someone with a differing opinion a platform to express that opinion because that's how hot the COVID issue was. And once an issue becomes a third rail, whether it's Paterno Sandusky or it's COVID, then everyone knows we have to go along because this is one of those stories that could turn you into Matt Lauer, who's actually a very good friend of mine, where he goes from being maybe the most powerful media personality in America to being someone who never existed for all intents and purposes. And we've seen other examples of that. And so COVID, I think, was maybe the ultimate example of that. And of course, the ultimate, not just irony, but the ultimately infuriating element of this was virtually everything that the experts said turned out to be wrong. And the reason why it took so long for us to figure that out and why it had so little impact is because the media never told the public or never even suggested that that might be the case. And here we are 2.5+ years later, and they still won't tell you the truth about what COVID.
That raises the interesting question of how does an issue become a third rail issue? It's interesting that shortly before March, like if you look in early February or January of 2020, you can find left liberals saying things like, hey, you crazy hypochondriacs, you don't have to wear a mask. Look at me. Here's a picture of me on an airplane not wearing a mask.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it flipped completely and you were the worst person on earth if you didn't agree with them. That's a fascinating phenomenon about exactly how that ossifies.
Well, in episode 2 and 3 of The Death of Journalism, Liz Habib and I go through the timeline that you just referred to in a way that I don't think anyone else ever has. So if this is a subject that someone listening to us is interested in, go check out episodes 2 and 3 of The Death of Journalism. And I think you'll be fascinated to hear it put into a very different context and perspective. And the short story of what happened was that you had a perfect storm of circumstances. You had a panic kick in, which always, of course, screws with people's brains. But once that panic takes hold and it becomes clear that the public is going to go along with what Gavin Newsom did here in California and shut down the state, which changed America forever and created this domino effect where the entire country was almost shut down for a seemingly unlimited amount of time, and effectively the Trump presidency was over. I believe that the left-wing media and the Democratic Party realized, oh my gosh, this could be really, really good for us. And because obviously we were in an election year, and I'm no fan of Donald Trump, but without question, they realized that a very important side effect of all this was going to be the destruction of Donald Trump's reelection campaign. And whether consciously or subconsciously, that played a major, major role in why people suddenly shifted their vision. You mentioned masks. I believe masks became popular all of a sudden. It makes no sense, by the way, that they became popular 3 months into the pandemic, right? Because if the experts were telling us in March, as Fauci was, that we don't need masks, and then all of a sudden in May, they decide, oh, we have to mandate masks. Well, either they're incompetent and should be fired, right? Because we just went through some of the worst parts of the pandemic with people that could have been saved by masks, and you told us not to wear them, or they're lying. And what was happening was the latter. They were lying because all of a sudden their liberal support group, their fans, were using masks as a anti-Trump virtue signal, as well as a signal that we are in something that we've never experienced before. This is unprecedented. This is an emergency. And you need to literally wear that on your face to tell the rest of the world that we're in an emergency, to stay away from me because I might get your COVID and die. But most importantly, let me show you my virtue that I'm proving that Donald Trump is a moron who doesn't understand science because he's not in favor of masks. That's how it happened. Once the liberal base decides that masks are a great virtue signal, the experts have to go along, because if they don't go along, they're going to lose their place as the preferred expert. And this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to these experts. They've been living their whole lives dreaming that we would be in a pandemic like this, because they would suddenly become relevant. And that's also why they were so hesitant to give up their power, because no human being ever gives up power voluntarily. And in this particular situation, they were in a circumstance where the media was giving them unlimited power for as long as they wanted, all because, for at least for a long period of time, everyone thought it was in their self-interest to do so.
Hey, folks, quick message from Ole Woods here. If you are looking to add Bitcoin to your retirement account and thinking about the long haul, then the best and easiest way to do that is with BitTrust IRA. BitTrust IRA helps you seamlessly and securely add cryptocurrency to your portfolio. It stores your private keys in nuclear bunkers with military-grade encryption. They have a 24/7 trading platform with no minimum investments and unlimited trades, plus a team to help guide you along the way if you have any questions. They also offer the lowest trading fees in the industry. I've often said that if Bitcoin is ever to gain more widespread acceptance, it's going to have to be more user-friendly, and BitTrust IRA could not be easier to use. So go to bittrustira.com/woods today to learn more. And for a limited time, BitTrust IRA is waiving the sign-up fee for Tom Woods Show listeners, a $50 value. That's bittrustira.com/woods, bittrustira.com/woods. Well, let me say a little something. I want to read you something from Ron Coleman, whose commentary I read from time to time, about why it is that I'm not equally concerned about problems coming from, let's say, left-wing media, right-wing media. I'm more concerned about the left-wing stuff. Now, I have spent plenty of time going after the right-wing. I have a whole book, 2/3 of which is aimed at neoconservatives, mm-hmm. Real Dissent. But here's what Ron Coleman says, and here's the issue. He says, at no point in U.S. history has every single cultural institution, press, entertainment, academia, unions, public employees, the professions, law enforcement, federal agencies, major corporations, Wall Street, nonprofits, mainline Protestant denominations, the military, been so profoundly and explicitly aligned the way they have been behind the left in the last 5 years. And so, if they get something wrong, it percolates through all the opinion-molding sectors of society. Whereas, oftentimes, if the right wing, quote-unquote, gets something right, like as when the New York Post was trying to talk about the Hunter Biden laptop story, it gets that story right and it gets suppressed. So that's why I don't see that it's an equal problem. And not that you're suggesting that it is, but that's why I don't see that if I have limited resources, I'm going to devote them to the elephant in the room, which is these people.
I tend to agree with you. There's no question that left-wing media is still far more influential in this country than right-wing. And I believe that they get it wrong more often for a lot of reasons we've already discussed. I guess my biggest problem with the right-wing media is what happened with Trump. I believe that Trump is an abomination. And I'm probably the only conservative in America, and this is not an exaggeration, at least that I know of, who's a public commentator, who has been consistently anti-Trump from the beginning while being very, very fair to him, especially against unfair media attacks. I've written many times when I was a columnist at Mediaite defending him against unfair media attacks, of which he has had many against him. But I'm the only guy that's been consistently anti-Trump while still being fair to him and who did not cave during COVID. If there's another person in this category, I am unaware of them. But my fellow Never Trump conservatives all caved during COVID. And why did they cave during COVID? Did they really believe that we were handling COVID in the right way? Well, maybe some of them panicked. I don't know. Maybe some of them weren't that smart. But the most important element of that, Tom, was they all knew where their audience stood. And liberals loved the COVID lockdown and overreaction. For a lot of reasons, it wasn't all political, but part of it was they knew it was bad for Donald Trump. And that played a huge role in all this. And so that didn't impact me because I don't care about that. I care about the truth. And the truth was, and I care about the country. And the truth was that the COVID reaction was an abomination and it was bad for the country. And it might be the stake through the heart of the country, depending on how where we go from here. I mean, I really believe this was a much, much bigger deal than just, 2 years plus of annoyance. I think this was the end of America as we know it, not just from a standpoint of the Great Reset, which I do think is real, but I think that what we learned during COVID was that the government can do anything in the name of safety, almost anything in the name of safety. And not only will they not be generally punished, except maybe in Florida, they will not be punished, those who were in favor of tyranny, they will be rewarded as long as the media goes along with it because people will think the government saved their lives. And that's the end of America right there. Once that narrative is set in stone, which this past election came very close to doing, it's over, Tom. We're done.
Yeah, that is why, to me, this issue has been so important. And, I have a newsletter I put out pretty much every weekday. And I continue to talk about this COVID thing long after it seemed like I should have, quote unquote, moved on to something else. Because I feel like even though now you can go to a concert and most places you don't have to wear a mask and a lot of the inconveniences and much, much worse than inconveniences have been lifted, the scar is still very much there. And the profound alienation I feel from a huge number of my fellow Americans is extremely disorienting. Mm-hmm. So that's why, for example, there's a documentary coming out by some very, very good, like very, very experienced senior filmmakers, virtually all of whom want to stay anonymous for obvious reasons. They don't want their careers destroyed. And it's called, with an ironic twist, Follow the Science. And it's about the effects of the lockdowns. And I donated five figures to that project because
wow, good for you.
I believe in this because, as you're saying, if we let this become the conventional wisdom, that this thing came along and people were dying, but thankfully we had smart people like Anthony Fauci, but unfortunately we had all these stupid heads who wouldn't listen to him, we would have gotten out of it sooner. If that solidifies, then I just I can't go on. I have to do everything possible. And so the nice thing about this project is not only does it have the charts and the graphs and the numbers, but it's trying to reach people, unfortunately, the way most people have to be reached, which is in the heart, which is through stories, which is about people whose lives were turned upside down by this. There's heartbreaking stories that I have to feel like there's some possibility can still reach some people on the fence.
The problem is that while that documentary sounds fantastic, it's not going to be on Netflix.
And I know it. I hear you.
And so therefore, it's not going to reach critical mass. It's not going to debut on the Today Show. It's not going to be given any credibility because the mainstream news media is deeply, deeply invested in the idea that they didn't blow it. Again, I go back to this weird phenomenon. The bigger the story, the worse the media gets it, and the less chance there is that they will fix it. Same thing happened in Penn State Paterno Sandusky. There's occasionally stories that they will fix if forced to, but when they get to a certain threshold, they never will because they put too many of their chips down on it. And in COVID, they put not only all of their chips, they put all of our chips for us on the fact that they were right. And it caused enormous damage. That's what's so counterintuitive. You would think the more damage, the more they would be forced and obligated to fix it or at least admit they were wrong and apologize. Instead, it's the opposite because there's so much damage. There's untold amounts of damage that were done and we will continue to see were done, especially to their our children. I have two young daughters that no one will ever be willing to take responsibility for because it's too much blood on their hands. So it not only destroys their credibility for all time, but it also blames them for an enormous amount of damage. And part of the reason why I never believed that, taking this out of the theoretical into the practical, I never believed in the red wave theory was I could not understand how it was that this country that's shown almost no signs of revolt against COVID, the COVID tyranny, could ever create a red wave when most of the country still thinks that mask mandates and vaccine mandates were legitimate and saved millions of lives. They're not going to punish the people that they think did that and it was effective and good and needed. And especially when they themselves become invested in those mandates because nobody wants to admit that they were duped and no one wants to admit that they went through a lot of hardship and forcing their kids to wear a mask for 2 years for no damn reason. No one wants to believe that. And so if we had a legitimate media in this country, the media would have said, you know what? We've re-examined these mandates and guess what? Wow. It turns out that Fauci was right in February of 2020. Masks don't really work. And by the way, oh my gosh, we always knew that masks didn't work for a virus like this. And oh, wow, we just panicked and we're sorry. And wow, that was a big mistake. And by the way, these vaccines haven't been nearly as effective as touted. And the idea that people were fired for not taking them and are still being punished for not taking them is kind of crazy, folks. But none of that happened. None of that happened. And by the way, it didn't even happen fully on the right. You know why? Because government COVID propaganda money and specifically vaccine propaganda money was driving a lot of the motivation in some of these right-wing media outlets. I doubt very many people know, Tom, that the number one advertiser on radio or talk radio should have been, this should have been the greatest thing that ever happened to the audiences of talk radio because talk radio would have been the only place to find the truth on COVID. Instead, talk radio was largely muted. Why? Well, the number one advertiser for 2020 and 2021 in all of radio, and it wasn't even close, was the United States government. And that was all COVID propaganda money. And I know how this works. Having worked in this industry as a former radio talk show host, I can guarantee you that there were right-wing conservative talk radio outlets that were terrified of going out too far outside of the accepted norm of COVID, I'll call it propaganda, because they would stop getting that government money in an era where advertising basically stopped because there, especially in 2020, there was no commerce going on. So the right largely took a dive. I mean, Newsmax, I know, took a dive because they were hoping to get vaccine money. as an outlet that would sell the vaccines to vaccine-hesitant Trump supporters. So they took a total dive on the vaccine. And by the way, I'm vaccinated. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. But let's tell the truth. The vaccines are not that effective, and they do not stop transmission. And the idea that they were ever mandated in a free country is beyond absurd. But this is the perfect storm that occurred, Tom, and it hit both the left and the right-wing media.
Well, here's a good sign. Okay, just so people aren't completely discouraged, here's a good sign. I think it's a good sign that despite the 24-hour-a-day propaganda, it's everywhere they turn, like people are basically kind of told that you are to be shunned if you don't have these certain fashionable opinions, that tens of millions of people still don't have them. They still refuse to adopt them, despite everything. And that's surprising to me that so many people would be that way. It's not what you would expect based on your experience in high school, where you know they'll give you the graduation day speech about how you should be your own person. The last thing any high school kid wants to do is be his own person. Everybody wants to have the same safe, wear the same sneakers, whatever, just blend in. And that there are tens of millions who refuse to blend in, even at great social cost, is encouraging to me. And it's also encouraging to me that we have a lot of independent voices. There's just a guy with a camera who's just an independent voice who will get you a lot of the news these days. So do you see any good signs? Not signs that ABC News is suddenly going to become reasonable, but just good signs when it comes to journalism.
Well, let me first respond to what you just said. One of the more shocking and depressing elements of the whole COVID insanity was how young people didn't revolt at all. I mean, it's just, I find it unfathomable that teenagers are supposed to be the most rebellious group among us. Here they are being tortured with masks and having their lives destroyed in a way that can never be recovered. Never. You never get your senior year of high school back, ever.
Yeah, and yet they don't care. I can't get over that they don't care.
It's still to this day, and I have nephews who were in this situation, had sports years completely wiped out after working so hard to be track and field star. I'm track and field, for damn sake. I mean, it couldn't be more safe as far as sports are concerned, having that totally wiped out. It was stunning how compliant that generation was. And one of the things I kept thinking about was, think about every teen-based movie that has been made in America for the last two generations is always about standing up to the man, right? I mean, that's the essence of every single one. And you know, that's what the hero does every single time. And I'm thinking, wow, that had no impact at all. I don't even know what to make of it. It made me conclude that this generation is fundamentally different than any other generation in American history, but to try to come up with some good signs. Well, look, you know, where you live in Florida, Florida obviously was the beacon. And the fact that they reelected Ron DeSantis with a larger percentage than maybe Gavin Newsom is going to get here in California, which is a story the media will not tell you, but I find to be amazing. I mean, Gavin Newsom, who ran against no opposition with zero money, an unknown candidate with a compliant media that's 1,000% in the tank for him in a state where there is no Republican Party, where he has a massive partisan advantage, is going to probably have maybe a little bit less of a margin than Ron DeSantis did in Florida, which is obviously still, while a red state, not an overwhelmingly red state, he had the entire media industrial complex against him. He had a well-known, well-funded candidate against him. And yet he wins this massive victory. And I think that's very telling. I mean, because obviously Newsom was the lockdown king and DeSantis was the freedom prince. And I can't tell you how depressed I would be right now if somehow DeSantis had lost or not won a big victory in Florida. I mean, it would be completely over at that point. But I see good signs in, obviously, in Florida. I think Kemp being reelected in Georgia is good. Noam in South Dakota, who was very good on COVID, got overwhelmingly reelected. I'm not 100%, I hesitate to start celebrating yet, but there's some signs where I live in Ventura County, which is just outside of Los Angeles, where we may have replaced the majority Democratic supervisors that were a huge part of our COVID tyranny with a Republican slate of supervisors. We got rid of our sheriff, who was an abomination during COVID. We elected someone who was promising to never do lockdowns again. So that's a good sign in a place where you wouldn't expect it, because we are absolutely a bluish area of the country just outside of Los Angeles. So, I mean, there are pockets of resistance, but I guess, Tom, to me, the country I thought I was living in, you wouldn't be having to look for pockets of resistance. You would be...
Yeah, no, I hear you.
You would be looking at, wow, isn't it funny that San Francisco is the only place in America that still believes in this crap? But that's unfortunately not the case.
Yeah, I agree. And so when I tell you what I think are some good signs, I don't mean to say this is a great situation. I mean, it's not all doom. But the fact that I have to pick out these kinds of things instead of being able to point to just a healthy society is a problem. But for instance, there's just the fact that somebody, if you look at the viewership numbers for CNN, they're pretty sad. They're actually pretty sad, even though... Mm-hmm. So in other words, CNN has influence vastly out of proportion to its viewership. And when you look at a guy like Joe Rogan, now, of course, you're not going to agree with every guest he has because he has such diverse guests. So he has my good friend. I mean, he was a groomsman at my wedding, for heaven's sake, Dave Smith. He's had him on a dozen times. Dave is great on every issue from COVID on down. He's fantastic. But then he'll have Bernie Sanders type people, of which he considers himself one. I don't know if he still does. But he has all different sorts of people, and he kind of lets you make up your own mind. And he's got probably 15, 20 times the audience that a typical CNN program has. You know, so something like that. Or Tim Pool is another example. He's a young guy who just worked and worked and worked, and now he's got this unbelievable platform with a vast number of viewers. So that's at least something. No, you're right. It would be better if we had a completely normal society, I'll grant you. But it would be worse if we didn't have these individuals who just have stood up and said, well, if you want the regime line on things, you can switch on NBC News, but I'm going to have people on my show who aren't on NBC News. And that's at least something.
Well, I agree with that. And I guess that's better than the alternative for sure. But see, I hate how balkanized and fragmented we have become in a media world. I even wrote a book about this many years ago that no one paid any attention to that was incredibly prescient. It's called The Death of Free Speech, where I outline my argument that media fragmentation, which was really only getting momentum at that point. I mean, we were far less fragmented then than we are now, that media fragmentation was going to split the entire country apart. Because we were all going to live in our own little realities. And boy, was I right about that in spades. Because I don't like the fact that we all live in our own realities now, that we have almost no communal experiences now. I mean, the Super Bowl is basically it. The Super Bowl is the last American communal experience. We can't even experience Election Day anymore because we have voting for a month before and we count votes for weeks after. I mean, it used to be that Election Day was a communal experience. That's been taken away as well. And so I don't think it's healthy at all for the United States of America to be living in a world where everyone's living in their own little reality, their own little bubble that's been created by them choosing their own media outlets to get their own information that'll make them feel better about themselves and the world around them. Because the truth can't survive in that world. And I've always been a truth guy, and the truth basically is dead. And that's one of the reasons why we created this podcast, The Death of Journalism.
Well, I'm going to urge people to check it out. As you said, you just released episode number 9, so you can get in on the ground floor. And what you're talking about is of urgent importance to everybody for reasons we've mentioned. So again, it's The Death of Journalism, and you can find it on any podcast platform. I use Podcast Republic, which is, I think, used by about 1% of the... I am the 1%. I use Podcast Republic. But you can find it wherever you like to get your podcast. Is there any other thing you'd like me to link people to while we're at it?
Well, again, I do think that the podcast With the Benefit of Hindsight, which you can also find iTunes, Spotify, and all the other major places, really is kind of the personification of this issue that we're talking about. If you're into true crime and you want to get into the nitty-gritty of, okay, here's a major story and what really happened as opposed to what the media told you happened, that is a fascinating and epic journey that you will take if you listen to With the Benefit of Hindsight.
All right, well, I'll have both of those up on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/2239. Well, John, it was great to get to know you in this conversation, and thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, folks, put it on your online calendar. Whatever calendar you have on your device, Black Friday is the day to remember old Tom Woods, because that is when I have a massive special at libertyclassroom.com, which is where you learn the history and economics that by some curious coincidence happened to have been left out of your formal education. Yes, you're going to learn the actual stuff that really happened. You're going to learn the real economics. We have a whole bunch of subjects. We've got dozens of courses taught by people you know and trust who are way smarter and way more honest than anybody else you have the potential to learn from. And you can learn as you're driving your car. It's my dashboard university. So check it out, libertyclassroom.com. Wait till Black Friday weekend and grab it. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.